take the business.
The item that we're ready for is the client assistance program complaints or issues.
Okay. The only case, there has been one CAF case this past quarter. The individual felt that services were taking a long time with regard to doing some scripting for JAWS and setting up his work site. I believe that has all been completely resolved. Carlos, anything else you want to add to that one?
No, it has been resolved, and in some situations, the employer's software is not that accessible to work with, and our staff don't have necessarily the expertise to deal with. So we are also contracting with the private entity to help us doing that.
Thank you. The other part of that is that they did the scripting and went to install it, and in the week between the appointments, they did an upgrade to the system, which they didn't say, which kind of broke the scripts that they went ahead and put in place. And they knew that they were in constant communication with each other and never said at any point in time that they were doing these updates. So it kind of complicated everything.
Oh, no kidding.
That's all on CAF.
I'm Mitch.
Okay. Since that was the end of the old business, the next thing would be the public comment. And hearing none, the next thing would be break for lunch, which we just did.
How about we break again for lunch?
So the next thing is the policy concerning weapons.
Before I jump into that, I do want to put Nicole on the spot since she just took a bite. sorry, Nicole. Earlier I acknowledged, I was talking about new staff who have completed their training and are on the job and have been during this past quarter. And so Nicole Chopin is with us, and she's works together with Mitch in the front office of the Omaha office. And just want to acknowledge you and welcome you.
Welcome. We're glad to have you here.
Thanks. Okay. I had raised a question because there's a new law allowing people who have the proper licenses to carry concealed weapons. Some buildings and businesses are putting up signs, you know, part of the law allows an entity or even a household to put up a sign that says concealed weapons are prohibited on that space. And so I wanted to see if the board wanted us to do anything about that. In the meantime, the Lincoln office did develop, not the commission office, but the building that we're in, developed a policy for personnel of the building that prohibits concealed weapons. I was told they were going to put a sign up on the front door, and is it? I haven't seen it.
No.
But I have seen it other places, so I know they have the signs available now. But anyway, that was just and some state agencies are doing it. Now, the state office building, like here in Omaha, is there a sign about that, or?
I don't think
you're pulling it down.
Okay, so I feel like it's less of an issue now than I did at first, especially because we're in different buildings and it's you know, the people we rent from across the state, some of it's state, some of it's private, so if you want us to pursue that, we will. Otherwise, we'll just hope the law takes care of itself. Any comments on that, Tori?
Yeah, that's probably, I mean, probably should have a sign at the commission. No weapons allowed, but as far as our meeting places.
Well, both. I was thinking of our offices. No, the offices. the offices.
Wouldn't all weapons be concealed to us? Sorry.
I don't see anything wrong with having a sign up that concealed weapons forbidden. I don't know why anybody would be foolish enough, a blind person, to take a weapon in there, but...
Mitch Green.
Okay, we're not actually officially in public comment time, but do you... Bob, were you saying that you think that there should be, or...
I think there should be a sign up.
In each of the commission offices?
Well, don't the buildings themselves have not permit... I think the state, the city office buildings would not allow weapons.
When the law first was being worked on, I thought that it had, that state office buildings were, a specific exception to that, and that concealed weapons were prohibited in all state buildings. In fact, my first checking into it was, does that still apply where we just rent from somebody else but we're a state agency? And I learned that that's not true in the law. It isn't, state agencies are not specifically prohibited from the law. So each entity has to decide if they want to post a sign to that effect. And of course, like when we're in a building with other things, which we are in just about every place, we wouldn't have the right to post the sign on the door where you first come into the building. But if you wanted us to have these signs, we would have to post them on, like, the door to go into the commission office.
Well, I guess, have we ever had a problem with this kind of thing?
No, but it was never allowed before that it was legal to carry.
Okay, so that's what the
right. But like I said, I mean, it does, you have to have special licensing, and I don't feel a need for it as much as I learn more about the law. I just wanted to make sure, that we knew about it and whether or not we should do so.
It's my understanding that these people that want a license, they have to go through some sort of training on handling of these concealed weapons, and then they have to apply. So it's fairly lengthy. It isn't just go up to the window and, get your license and go out and get your gun.
No, right. I think it's course, really yeah. pretty well regulated.
Yeah.
Okay, well, of course, the people that society always wants to protect against aren't the ones who are going to obey the law.
My question
which is why I raised the question.
My question is this, being, equal for everybody, if we're going to put this sign up, are we going to put it up in Braille?
Well, I would have assumed so, because the door signs are, the signs that the commission has, for where, which office is which and so forth are. So I guess I just kind of...
I'd say it's a non-issue right
presume
now.
Presume that, but at this point...
I don't really think we need it as such.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I think that's good. Consensus. We have decided that is not necessary.
All righty.
Okay. The next item is... policies concerning drivers, which is a response to a message from the staff virtual suggestion box. And we did receive information concerning the, what is expected of drivers and what is expected of people who are not employees who ride with drivers from the commission. It seemed clear-cut to me. Does anybody have any questions or comments or anything on the subject?
I think the policy is clear-cut. It's probably just a matter of whether or not everybody follows them.
Yeah, the only question I'd have with something like that is the state's liability insurance. What does it permit? I know when I had a lot of these situations in the the only people covered under liability insurance would be employees and persons working for the agency on a contract or something of that nature, but private citizens, not employed or otherwise with the state, were not covered by the liability insurance, so that if an accident occurred, they would not be covered, and they'd have to proceed under the State Tort Claims Act to get restitution for any injury they might have suffered. So.
So do you think that the waiver that we were sent that has, you know, that talks about how a person who's riding says, you know, if the car gets in an accident, I'm not going to do anything to anybody. If the accident was caused by somebody else, then I can individually do whatever I want to. But as far as the driver of the state vehicle and all of that, yeah, they're not held.
They're not held liable.
So does that answer what
I think
you
so.
Were talking about?
I think so.
Okay.
If you sign a waiver. You're required to sign a waiver. That's binding on the individual signing it. So.
And is all staff, I'm assuming all staff is aware of these procedures and
yes.
the waiver thing?
Yes.
And so if somebody doesn't have somebody sign one of those, I mean, where does that get signed? At what point does that happen? I mean, if somebody isn't a client of the agency and is going somewhere.
Did that. Before
you don't have to be officially a client. You know, if we bring a consumer in a car to a program or a meeting, they're a part of the business of the commission. And if we have someone who's a mentor, a mentee in the mentoring program, they're a part of our whole program.
So somebody has had all of those folks sign.
No, I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm saying that we don't need the waiver.
They would not
because
need the waiver.
They are a part of our business. As
okay. Oh. Okay. Okay.
We had a couple of times where people there were. Well, actually, the trip didn't happen. I think, but there was a group activity that was going to happen to go down to Kansas City and. There were a couple of teenage children of the staff who actually had even been helping with the group training and that were going to go along. And so that's the point where we came up with this waiver to make sure the parent knew, the kid knew, and it was just, and yes, it was legal that they could go with us. So the point where it happens, to answer your question, is that a staff person who is involved with transportation for someone would be responsible if a supervisor knew that there was going to be someone in the car. The supervisor might bring it up to the counselor, did you get this signed, or you know, whatever. That's kind of it doesn't happen very often. With regard to the question that came up, it was some perceptions about who was being transported
right.
where,
mm-hmm.
which
right.
were not correct. They hadn't asked questions of the people involved. They had just made assumptions.
So as far as responding to that particular inquiry, one of the things that happens is, since we don't know who initiates those, the only way that we can respond as a commission board is to respond to the entire staff about an issue that would be raised. So would our response at this point be, we have reviewed the documentation and we don't find there to be a problem or something like that?
You asking me?
I'm asking the board.
Okay.
Well, I think the policy is, we reviewed the policy and it speaks to the issue if, you know, to our knowledge, well, it's up to the supervisors to monitor the policy, but the policy is fine.
I would ask or request that you include a statement that encourages people to, if they see something that they think is out of line or they question or they wonder about, go ahead and ask either that area supervisor or, you know, ask whoever seems to be the person most closely involved to it so that we can answer the question.
Okay. Okay. If there is nothing else on that subject, we'll move on to the transportation for the public to attend NCBVI board meetings.
Okay, do you want me to give a little background?
Okay.
In the Lincoln and Omaha areas, when we have meetings, we will occasionally get calls from consumers, and you know, if somebody's going away, we can make that provide that transportation. But we haven't really solicited, and I mean, we inform people, anybody that might be interested, of the meeting, but we haven't arranged for transportation. Now, in when we've met, say in Kearney and North Platte, we, the counselors and supervisor out there, actively work to get people there with phone calls and emails, and they also do provide transportation. In those areas, there's no public transportation and even no cabs. So even though in Lincoln and Omaha the public transportation is not the greatest, especially on the weekend, at least it exists. So that is, I guess, the main reason we've thought that it was a good idea to offer transportation elsewhere, but we haven't in Lincoln and Omaha. So this time before this meeting, there was the question of, well, should I let everybody know to contact, who should we all contact to get transportation or something along that line? I'm not opposed to us providing transportation. On the other hand, it could be quite a logistical issue. There would definitely have to be a cutoff point where you'd have to let whoever know by a certain point. Inevitably, we have people that ask for a ride right before the meeting or even reserve a place on the in a vehicle and then don't come. So it's kind of complicated, and it's just we've just kind of haven't done it.
Well, they'd have to be advised, though, that it's their liability if something happens, that they're not covered. You know, if they're riding in the car, just you pick them up, say, well, you can ride along with us, and you have an accident, they have to realize that they're not, the state has no liability for them riding in the vehicles. It's their own risk.
Well, do they have
sheriff
there out in North Platte?
This isn't public comment time. Sorry about that. It is. And if we weren't trying to rush, I generally, as chairman, have been pretty lenient about the comments at whatever time. But so what you're wanting us to do, Pearl, is to make a suggestion as to doing it differently, or are you just...
Yeah, I guess I want just to get your opinion. If you feel strongly that we, the commission, should facilitate people getting to meetings, and that is, you know, really have organized transportation provided. If you think we should do that, tell me. If you think it's inconsistent for us to do that in one area of the state and not in another, then you need to tell me that too.
I think that after I thought it through, that, you know, when as I emailed you, I think, you know, this is something that both consumer organizations could, you know, get their own drivers, or maybe we could all work together on. I think we are opening a can of worms if we transport people, you know, through Omaha and Lincoln. I mean, we have tons of people who could go, and I know how much it is of a hassle just to get people to NFB meetings, and, you know, they have to go clear in advance and let us know, and then some people will still back out, and I know some of our drivers are starting to get a little burned out, so I think to have the commission actually provide the drivers when we do have some options is probably not feasible. I mean, I don't think it's inconsistent, because the western part of the state and central part is such a difference, you know, to the eastern part.
Yeah, transportation. Yeah.
Keeping in mind, though, that you're going in a state vehicle and the state, as I said before, if they have an accident, then the state's liability is exposed, that it wouldn't be the insurance, it would be the state itself, and they'd have to file tort claims. So that's my concern. Of course, I dealt with that for 40 years, so that's the individual is exposing himself to the possibility that if he's injured, he can't go against anybody, no matter how negligent the driver of the state's vehicle was or what the circumstances were. He's just not covered under their insurance.
So they're just not covered whether they sign a waiver or not?
I think that's right.
Yeah, the waiver is a little more of the person
knows that if I'm injured, it's my fault. Yeah. No, nobody else's fault.
Mm. Well, you know, I have mixed feelings, because, you know, although it's true to say that there is transportation in the Lincoln and Omaha areas, to get somewhere by a certain time, can really be an issue. If it were such that there really were good and viable options for people, I think we need to do what we can at every level to encourage people to come and to participate in the formulating of the policies for the commission, and I think transportation is a big issue. I think we do need to, if it is going to happen through the commission itself, then what you're saying is absolutely right. There needs to be a cutoff time. There needs to be, whatever the maximum is, or you know, that kind of thing. I mean, you know, I think that there are things like that, and if that is something that just, you know, that you're not either able to do or just think is more work for already overworked people, then we need to figure out a different way to do it. We don't, for whatever reason, have a lot of attendance, and I think that we need to do things to try to make it more possible for people to come to meetings. Because, as you say, although there is transportation, it's not the most reliable.
I understand that, too. But what the answer would be.
And so what it can look like, just in terms of the records of our meetings, is that people in the central and western part of the state care a lot more about what's going on than people in the eastern part of the state do. And I don't know, I don't know for sure if that's really true or not, but if the transportation differences are there, that certainly becomes one of the reasons.
Well, if there's an outreach too, trying to get people to the transportation.
Well, no matter what how well intentioned the policy would be to take these people, you have to comply with the state's overall policy with regard to liability insurance and so forth. So, what I think, before you do anything, you should contact the Attorney General's office and see what the liability would be. If it may have changed since I handled these things, what the liability for the state would be in the case of an accident
policy, transporting a private citizen to a meeting of the commission.
You couldn't consider that a commission activity?
See, I do. I would consider that it would be a...
Because it's not like we're taking into a consumer organization, we're taking it to the government entity that represents them.
Well, it's the same thing with any other agency, though. They've always held that they were for state and you had to be either an employee of the state or you had to be contracted to perform a service for the state before you could ride in state vehicles. And so, should check into it, see if the insurance provisions have been changed in the recent past, because you can't expose the state to liability.
We can certainly check into it and report back with further information.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to know.
Okay, because you know, it is a bit different circumstance, so
just to be safe.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm glad that we're thinking about it and looking into mm-hmm. it, because I do think that people need to be encouraged to participate and to be not only aware but able to say something at meetings.
Yeah, and the other thing is that we're going to be losing 3 commissioners, and we need to find people that would be interested to serve too.
Yes, the more people we can get to see the meetings.
Okay, if there is nothing else on that, we'll move to the item policies concerning technology products and service delivery. And Daryl, you had said during the break.
I keep changing my mind, but again, this is a situation where people came to me and said they didn't want their names used. So I suppose I suppose I should just address their concern just because I said they would. I think the first concern has already been answered. They were concerned that sometimes delivery of technology was slow and some people didn't get what they needed, but obviously you've gone through the client's assistant program. You've also, and that deal has been worked out. As I found out this morning, we don't prioritize like an order of selection, so you know, people are given technology based on, you know, their needs. So I think that answers that question. The other thing that was brought up to me is I have a question regarding the ordering of technology. Do our technological experts, do they get to order the material, or does it have to go through like Dave or Bill, or who's responsible for the ordering of the materials, like the software or hardware and things?
That equipment that a client will be using? Or for the...
That a client will be using.
Okay. The counselor works together with the technology specialist. I think it varies that sometimes either the counselor or tech specialist will actually write the authorization.
Okay.
Is that right? It just depends on who's working most intently with the person.
Yes.
An authorization that's written goes through Bill and Dave to get paid.
Oh, okay.
But we have a process for the request to come to the counselor and the technology specialist.
Okay.
And then once it gets there, we in the front office then write up the purchase order and actually fax that order to whichever vendor, or email to whichever vendor, depending on the process. And then Bill or Dave, somebody at the line authorizes the actual payment once they get the invoice.
That answers my question. Again, when people don't give me more specifics, it's hard to articulate what they really want, but I feel like I've done my civic duty.
Well, and I guess I would encourage the board, too. You're very welcome, if there's an issue or question an individual has, to kind of work as a liaison for that person to the agency, to bring a question to me that I can check out, get some answers to you, may or may not need to be brought up at the public meeting.
Okay.
And you're always welcome to do that, either to your local office people or to me. It doesn't have to come to me, but, you know, you can certainly advocate for people or get questions answered and be in between the meetings.
Great.
Thank you.
Yes, not only, you know, I appreciate your saying that, Pearl, and also one of the things that I do just as a just an ordinary part of doing things is to find out if, when someone talks to me about an issue, if that person has or has not already talked with people who have to do with that.
Yeah.
If not, I suggest that they go back and do that, mm-hmm. and then come to me if whatever it is doesn't feel resolved, or I'm willing to go with them if they want me to, or maybe we can contact the person together by phone, or however, you know, if somebody just doesn't feel comfortable doing it alone, I'm certainly willing to do that. Mm-hmm. And usually that will resolve things, you know, without having to come to this point with it. Also, if people are wanting to be anonymous, one of the things that they need to understand is that they may not get their actual questions answered,
yeah.
either as expediently or as efficiently, or maybe not even at all, by not raising it themselves. And so I also let people know, you know, if you're going to be anonymous, I may have, A, misinterpreted what you wanted to begin with, and B, might get you a response that isn't really, you know, what you want. So it's always the best if people will to step up and ask a question and whatever. And, you know, the commissioners and the commission staff are friendly folks, and so we need to encourage people to participate in their own seeking of information. And one thing we can also do is to help people to know what are the avenues, you know, what can they do to get something resolved, and who can they go to, and how does that work? So it's good when people come to us. It's best when they come with a name and a, you know, direct involvement. It's just better for everybody.
Thank you.
Okay, so the next item is the January 25th Rehabilitation Services Administration Stakeholders Conference Call. And we did briefly talk about that before. There were a lot of people on the call because it was all of Nebraska's rehabilitation entities. That is the Voc Rehab Department, the Statewide Independent Living Council, the Client Assistance Program, the consumer groups, you know, anyone who is working with or is a disabled person or someone who is receiving services and that kind of thing. When it came, and each of us took turns making comments, and we tried not to necessarily say what other people had already said. And I did send everybody the notes that Roseanne Ashby sent, mm-hmm. that she took on the meeting and put out for everybody. You know, my comments were concerning the fact that older blind people need more services and therefore more money, and that we were trying to do that here in Nebraska. And I talked about our willingness to be partners and to network about things, no matter what they are, concerning blind people and getting services. And we talked about salaries here, the comprehensive system of personnel development, that we've worked to make it so that people have higher paying and more competitive jobs, in the sense that you know, they are more competitive with the other entities, not only in this state but elsewhere, but that needs to continue to be worked on. And we also, when we talked about training and services that are available, that we always want people to consider what anyone who's having to do with it, whether it's Rehabilitation Services Administration or anybody else, what they know about blindness and best practices and those kinds of things. And so when they're monitoring and doing whatever they do, that sometimes it feels like numbers are more important than programs, and that's a real issue for us, and we don't want that to be overlooked. So Those are the kinds of things that that I talked about on that call. And I think that when the RSA people come in March, we'll get more opportunity to interact with them. It did seem like Roseanne Ashby herself was trying to get to know people and really wanting to know what it is that we want. You know, there certainly is a lot of bureaucracy there, and some of the changes really are difficult to deal with. We also talked about the regional offices and the, you know, that we, there were things that were beneficial that we got there. You know, we specifically talked about the face-to-face training that we have been able to have, and a lot of that was through the regional continuing education projects, but RSA had to approve it or be a part of it, and their, I don't know if they had to approve it or not, but their regional office personnel were certainly there as resources that were very well, you know, very much needed. So I don't know, that still feels real up in the air to me as far as what exactly some of these changes are going to cause as time goes on. So, you know, that's my report on that, and I don't know if anybody has any questions or other comments. And if not, we'll move along to the February 8th support group for commission boards and state rehabilitation councils. And we already, as I, you know, we talked about that a little bit before too. I think that that entity, if it comes into being, may be able to be useful in terms of information gathering, maybe in terms of leveraging for face-to-face training, having ways of staying in touch with other state entities about both the good and the bad of what go on in our various states, and how we can maybe brainstorm and bring some new ideas to each of our states, and maybe network to help with some of the other things. You know, when it came to things like governors not appointing in a timely fashion and things like that, you know, we can talk about how we have made that so far to work here. And when it comes to some of the other things that, you know, where there are materials that are developed, some of the materials that were developed when we went to the training down in Kansas City are supposed to be available on the website and for the Rehabilitation Services Administration, and we can interact through some of these conference calls and other ways about how to make best use of those for us as agencies having to do with the blind, and you know, how we can make sure that they're accessible and all of those issues that are so common to pretty much everything we do. And again, in the interest of time, unless people have questions, we'll leave it at that. And we'll move along to legislation. We have LB 300, the workforce law that would involve both, well, all three, the Vocational Rehabilitation Agency, the Commission for the Blind, and the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families organization, you know, that entity, and would allow for the two-year job positions. I don't know if anyone has anything. We got the message with the notes from Amy Burrish, who spoke on behalf of the commission staff. Did anybody else have, you know, anything about the hearing, or do we, have we heard anything further about that bill?
The only thing that I've heard is that the hearing went well. There were there was testimony from us, from Voc Rehab, and you know, in favor of it. There was one neutral, I believe, and no opposition. But then there hasn't been any more action on it. That was just week before last, I believe.
Yeah, the 14th was the hearing, so.
The board is in agreement with that bill?
We've had some discussion, email type discussion around it. You know, my concern is that it be, I think it's another one of those things that if it's administered well, could be advantageous to some blind people who are needing job experience. It would basically allow for people to have 2-year work experience. And a lot of us do have trouble getting our foot in the door to begin with to get work experience. And so I think that that could be a good thing about it. I always have concern about these kinds of things potentially becoming pigeonholers, you know, where if people have folks that, you know, are having a hard time, and if the jobs that are available or made available become jobs that are not really things that would lead a person beyond that, but just give a person a 2-year thing and then drop them off, that could be a problem. And so, you know, it would depend a lot on how the regulations are and that sort of thing. But I'm, you know, I guess overall I feel open to it. That's kind of where I'm coming from. What about the rest of you, commissioners?
Excuse me.
I'm sorry again. We're
okay. That's fine. That's okay.
We do have another public comment time.
I got to try. So
commissioners, do
I think it's, you know, I really commend Senator Howard. I mean, I think it's a great great idea. I mean, I would like to believe that something like this could happen. I'd be surprised, but I would really be tickled if something like this could happen. Could always, you know, be, once it's implemented, I mean, the devil's in the details, but I mean, it's mm-hmm. certainly got a lot of, you know, potential. I mean, it's really hitting the right note that people need a start, and you know, even if unpaid internship, I mean, this, it's just getting people's foot in the door.
Yeah.
So I think it's, I think we should probably send something, you know, as the commission. I don't know if it adds any extra weight because we're kind of a preaching to the choir, but I think Senator Howard should be really, you know, complimented, and the committee basically here that we think this, you know, it's a great idea, and you know, really tries to get to the heart of the, you know, problem with getting blind people in the employment door.
Now, I don't. They're not unpaid, are they?
No,
I didn't think so.
No, it's paid positions.
They're paid positions.
Okay, well, even better. I was thinking that there was some.
The bill does say entry level. There's some discussion about what that means, but yeah, they're all paid positions.
Well, then great. I mean, that's even better. That'd be my thought. Is the commission board should send a letter to the committee, thinking that, letting them know that we think this is a great potential, and with a high unemployment rate of the blind, this is a great way to jumpstart people's employment careers. Mm-hmm.
I agree. Is
that a motion?
Are you making a motion?
Well, I guess, yeah, if we need a motion, then I'll make a motion that we should write a letter from the commission board stating our support of this measure, and really complimenting Senator Howard for, suggesting such.
If you're an employee of the state, I don't think you should goodbye.
Okay, is there
second.
A... Is there,
I second
okay,
that.
So there's... Okay, so both... It sounded like both... Daryl and Bill seconded. Okay, and so if there is no further discussion, we will call for the questions. So, Bob?
Yes.
We're doing the
okay.
roll call.
Yes.
Daryl?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Bill?
Yes.
Okay, so it's unanimous. Bob, would you be willing to draft the letter and send it around, and then we'll...
Sure.
Okay.
Barbara, may I
Sure.
clarify one piece? That the commission board members are not employees of the commission. They are the governing board of the commission. So they're appointed by the governor.
We're appointed by the governor, so we're not commission employees. That's right.
Thank you.
Okay. And then LB 445.
Yes, that's the bill to establish official state certification for vocational rehabilitation counselors for the blind based on having a bachelor's degree in a related field and completing the immersion training of the center. And there's it's like 600 hours, and it's quite specific of what's involved with that in an effort to solidify the we have a rigorous approach and a rigorous training, and we want to solidify the validity of the training that is provided. The federal people require us to have to hire either people with masters in voc rehab or the highest level in the state, and up to now, there really has not been an official highest level in the state that has related to voc rehab for the blind. So that's what we're working on. The hearing was yesterday afternoon. It went really well. The senators really were all quite receptive, I think, and Senator Steubman, of course, introduced it, and then I made some comments, and so did Carlos. And we answered a few questions, and so it was, I think, real encouraging.
Did the issue of the commission board approval of the person come up?
Yes, that came up, and it came up kind of as a question of how this would work. Senator Stuttman had already advised us that he wanted to have the amendments to the bill happen within the committee. But I went ahead and said that would be an area that they could consider amending the bill, that because the board itself would not really be involved with those individualized personnel issues, but rather that the commission would establish the certification. So I answered it that way, kind of encouraging them to do that. There is one other change we would like to have in there that would relate to a reciprocal nature, not grandfathering, but people who are on staff that in fact have the degree and the training as it's outlined in here, that they would be certified as well. So that we hope will be brought into the language of the bill. But that did not come up yesterday.
Would that be from the newest person back? I mean, the newest person who has completed training, I mean, where would that end?
Well, yeah, what we would like is for everybody currently on staff who does meet the requirements for certification, that they would be certified.
Okay.
It is not a grandfathering just because somebody's been on staff. If they didn't have those things, they wouldn't be certified. But if they do meet what they would need today for certification, then they would.
So if there's somebody who's been there since before there really was an orientation center, what would happen with that person?
If they did not come later and go through the training, then they would not be a certified VR counselor.
Okay. sense.
And remember, this is not for all of our teachers and staff, it's just specifically the voc rehab counselors.
Okay.
So if they're not certified, then what does that mean? What are the ramifications for that?
The ramifications for, in terms of the Rehab Act and what RSA is telling us we have to do, is that that person would not be able to determine eligibility, write IPEs, the plans for employment, and certify completion of a program. And so if there was someone on staff who was a voc rehab counselor and didn't meet certification, then those parts of that person's job would maybe be done by a supervisor or some other way. Or maybe that person would take on more of a home teaching role. That, you know, there's different ways we could address that.
So you'd work with the person, you know, still try to keep them, not...
Right.
They wouldn't have said who's
right. There are a lot of things that we do beyond those three, you know, eligibility, writing the plan, and so on.
Okay.
Well, how many, do we know how many people that would affect?
Carlos, do you know offhand how many VR counselors wouldn't fit?
Just one. The rest have much better. I went to the training.
So if the legislature doesn't pass this, it's not like we would necessarily be in a...
Okay. Yeah, if they didn't pass it, then...
Because we still have to have something.
Yeah. Then we would have to require... we would have to only hire... master's level people for VR counselors. That's what I've addressed this in the state plan every year that it's submitted to the federal people.
Mm-hmm.
Our approach has always been approved until now. Our approach is that there's quite a few parts to it. One part is that the actual certification regulations within the state have language that says state agencies are exempt from requiring master's degrees. And that's one piece of it. And the feds looked at that and said that it didn't pass muster. You know, I guess there's different ways we could go with it. We're not opposed to people with a master's degree. We like education. We think it's a good thing. But frankly, we don't have very many applicants to jobs who have master's degrees. So we always say master's preferred, but if you have a bachelor's or, you know, and actually a person with blindness experience or experience that relates to what we do, is probably more well qualified than somebody with a master's. But that's beside the point.
Well, and people with master's degrees are wanting to, and sometimes needing because of all their loans and so forth, to make more than what we can offer.
Right, that's why
that's
we don't
really
have,
a lot yeah. of why a lot of people mm-hmm. with those don't apply here.
Right. Yeah, so there's a lot of aspects to it, and we would just, if it's not passed, we will work with RSA to figure out what it is that we need to do and that will work. Actually, the voc rehab agency, what they have done, because they have the same problem, even though they still mm-hmm. do pay more than the commission, they have established, they don't call them voc rehab techs, but it's sort of a, it's a similar kind of a job title, which does everything with the client except those three pieces. But they have more, they have supervisors and district managers that don't do anything with clients, you know, that don't all they do is supervise. They don't have their own caseloads and so on. And so those few pieces of the person's whole package, then they're the ones that sign it. So they basically have gotten around it in a way that looks like it complies, but in terms of actual working with the client, it's a little bit contradictory, I think, but then that it works, you know, and their structure is different, so that's fine. But we would have to, we certainly would continue our emphasis on the training that we know makes for good counselors and work from there.
Okay, is there any other discussion on legislation among the board? If not, our next item is the focus topics for the next meetings, and we have, you know, listed here that the next meeting will be June 2nd in Lincoln, and that is how the Rehab Act impacts the blind. Our August 11th meeting will be in Norfolk, and we'll be talking about services to Native Americans. The November 17th meeting will be in Lincoln, and we'll be talking about a partnership between educators and rehab service providers. So that finishes the year, and I think if we want to do another discussion of focus topics, maybe we'll do it next time when it's not so weather bad or whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. So all of that being said, the next thing is a period for public comment. So all of you who've been holding your comments, now is the time.
Jack Monroe.
Okay.
As far as the transportation goes, as far as providing it and things, I think that the committee should look at the fact of just getting the word out and let it be known the location and times and the transportation to those who wish to attend, the rest of the blind public. They're on their own as far as as far as expanding your meetings to operate to the outside world or to a larger audience. I would like to suggest that you look into the Nebraska Educational TV program and have it broadcast, and then you could use call-ins as a means of communication. In today's technology, that's one of the most viable means of having a meeting, and a public meeting, and not having everybody at the same location.
Now, the public meeting laws do speak to entities like ours, since we're not actually a committee. We're a commission board, and we are allowed once in a while to do teleconference kinds of things. If we were all in the same place and people called in to us, that might be one thing that we could do, but we do need to be most of the time. I think maybe it's 25% of the time or something, if I remember that correctly, we can do a teleconference or video conference or that kind of thing. Am I on the right track here, Pearl?
Yes, that's right. It's been a while since we've...
Yes, it has.
But that's basically the way I remember it.
Okay. So what you're saying, Jack, is that we would still meet as a board, like here or whatever.
Just telecast it or make it available. Alive.
So people, and we're trying to work on doing that via the web. I mean, we have been trying to, with that Plex Talk machine and that kind of thing, we are working on that and on the interactive part. I'm glad you're bringing that up again, because we have talked about doing that in one way or another, and it's a great idea, because it is useful to have a way for people to interact a lot of times, without necessarily needing to deal with the public transportation system as it is. I mean, we all need to keep working on making it better, but in the meantime, if we can work various ways of making it possible for us to communicate without people having to necessarily physically go somewhere, that is a good idea.
Hubert.
Yes.
What he was talking about sounds like real time at that instant of the meeting, whereas the Plex Talk is working good for having it available for later review or listening.
Yeah. True.
So for someone who's not at the meeting.
I'm speaking.
Oh, what was the? Sorry. Excuse me. Yeah. Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. What was the thing that we were talking about that at the last staff meeting that we attended back in April of last year, I think it was, where we talked about something that was going to possibly allow us to have the meeting happening in real time with people interacting with us somehow or another through the internet?
Would that be video conferencing?
How about Newsline?
I don't know.
Make an available Newsline live. I mean, with today's modern technology and stuff, I mean, you know, everybody could, most everybody's got a phone. And, so, you know, you pick up the phone and.
Well, there are.
And you dial into it and then you listen to the meeting.
Yeah, there are ways of doing that. Now, whether the system, the powers that be would consider that to be a teleconference, even if we were all in the same place, I don't know.
Well, if you do it, again, if you do it through the news line, then you're providing a live news. So.
Well, it's something like, I mean, that's the wave of the future. I mean, we should constantly be
looking
at...
Brainstorming is great.
...as these kinds of ideas, because...
Yeah. Mitch, did you have...
I had a couple of things. On this issue, I would happily be willing to research and give you guys some alternatives that I find for things, because it's kind of sounds like what he's asking is if simultaneously while this meeting is going on, do the public meeting laws prohibit, you know, if there is an actual public meeting that you can physically go to, would that 25% limit count? Since there is actually an existing meeting that you can physically go to.
If the commissioners were at that meeting, I honestly don't know. I would hope not. I mean, I would hope that if there was an actual location and commissioners were there, that people could...
That would be... I attend webcast meetings all the time that... You know, you. I mean, obviously, I don't watch the monitor. You can watch the. You know, it's. You can watch the web. You know, the speaker on the monitor of your computer, but people can, email in questions and
yeah.
It's.
And I would think that you could circumvent that ruling about 25% limitations for the simple fact that if we had equal transportation available to us, which we do not. Therefore, we should, that 25% limitation should be waived gladly.
Well, we're just talking about the 25% is just when the commissioners themselves
when we aren't in the same place. Yeah.
So that's not a problem.
I was taking it. Okay, that
we can get other people to
restriction. Mm-hmm. Understand.
I'd be happy.
Well, I would like to see
okay. Yeah, it'd be interesting, Mitch, to check in. I mean, to webcast. I mean, what's involved? I mean. Probably.
We'd be glad to accept whatever information you could get to us about that, Mitch, because I'm not.
I had a second comment back on your weapons policy. You were talking about signs in the buildings and things like that, but what about, and again, this might be asking out of ignorance or inexperience, but what about in our contract for people who actually attend the center, like the apartments? Stay in the apartments and stuff like that. Is there something in that contract too that speaks to this new law?
Actually,
should there be?
the center rules. Sorry, I can't talk right now.
I apologize if I'm asking this out of
no, that's
out of
fine.
Turn. I'm just
the center rules prohibit weapons in the center and in the. In the apartments,
so
and just because there's a new law allowing licensed people to have a concealed weapon, that doesn't matter. That our center rules are still what they are, and we would not allow.
So it's already written into.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yes.
That's what I was asking. Sorry.
Right. No, that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah, that like so many other things happened because we did have an issue with it about 30-some years ago, so.
Really? Wow. I haven't read the whole thing, so that's why I asked out of much experience.
Bob Junior, very quickly. You were, follow up very quickly on what Jack said. I really think it's not a good idea for the commission to provide transportation, probably because of liability issues, at least in Omaha and Lincoln. You know, because we have, you know, adequate transportation here, so that probably should be a non-issue. The other question I have, you were talking earlier about state drivers and so on. Maybe I missed the boat, or maybe I missed something, don't understand something. If an individual such as myself were to, on the QT, call up one of the drivers off state time and have them do personal work for me, I assume that's not what we're talking about here, is that correct?
Right.
Yeah, if somebody, you know, if somebody is, you know, is a driver and they, and that person offers services, they may contract with the commission, then they may contract with individuals. And I don't think that there are any laws that prohibit someone who is a contractor for providing transportation to do that with whomever. I mean, I think they can do that with the state and with people privately.
Okay,
and
that,
yes.
Yeah.
But they're not going to be able to use state cars.
No. Yeah.
State vehicle.
I do want to comment that sometimes what has occurred is that people observe a staff person leaving the agency or doing something with a driver who is one of our drivers. And so they assume, oh, they're using their own, you know, acting in their state capacity to run to the drugstore. Well, that's not the case. And the people who do, you know, use drivers for their own time, they pay it themselves, but they're not going to have a big sign that says, not state time right now. So, that's kind of where I was talking about with, if people would just ask questions or bring up points more directly, we could resolve a lot of questions that are just misunderstandings.
And the person wouldn't be using a state car at that point.
Absolutely.
Nancy?
I was just going to make, I made a note earlier, Joe's not here anymore, but she raised a question, it wasn't public comment, and it was a question for Jim about whether Sheriff Fair was available across the state. And I just wanted to raise that again, because it was regarding transportation.
You want me to answer it, or wait till I call her up? I mean, it's up to you.
I think it's something that she raised. I thought it would be good public information.
So yes, please answer it.
Can you say where Sheriff Fair is available?
Bill, you might have to help me out on this. I know that obviously Omaha, Lincoln, and Hastings, and we're still undertaking the pilot project. And where, Bill, where is that? North Platte?
Scotts Bluff, North Platte, and
With residency restrictions?
Not on our transportation. With the Sheriff Fair.
Well, because if I wanted a program like that for Lincoln taxi cabs, I'm not permitted to purchase those, even though I may have business as such in Lincoln.
What do you mean, Chair? Give a lift? No, residents of Lincoln.
I'm sorry?
Residents of Lincoln only.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Even though I would have business there in Lincoln.
Yeah.
Then I don't get the entitlement of it.
That's right. That's why we're working on the transportation, statewide transportation.
So Scotts Bluff and North Platte are in process.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been a pilot program there for God's sake.
And
Hastings, Grand Island.
Well, it's been authorized for, Hastings and Grand Island. Those three different programs, but the transportation has been authorized too for North Fork and Beatrice, but it hasn't been set up yet.
Right.
That's what we're struggling with.
Right now it's, Hastings, Lincoln, Omaha, Grand Island, and North Platte, Scotts Bluff are definitely up and running.
Grand Island is up and
running. Yeah, that's part of Hastings.
Okay.
And the other one was, it was Beatrice, Norfolk.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are in the...
They're pilot.
Those, yeah.
North Platte, Scotts Bluff, Beatrice, and Norfolk are pilot
They're
programs.
The pilots, right.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. I just didn't want to lose that thought for Joe.
Thank you, Nancy.
Connie Daly.
Connie.
Robert Newman.
Just wanted to remind you that we are having the kids group home teaching next week. I heard back from some of you. It's going to be at 10 o'clock at our office, and we will be building a craft project and having lunch there, and you're all invited.
Which one?
The commission board.
That's a poor question. What's for lunch?
So if you could let me know by Tuesday if you plan to attend.
So, Robert Newman.
Yes, Robert.
So just for a minute, going back to that bill, I can't remember the name, it's for the 2-year job experience. You know,
LB 300.
So that's for any and all entry-level positions within the state, right?
Yeah.
As long as they have college.
It's through that state.
It's not just for college grads, it's for any type of job, right, through with the college requirement or not, right?
Right,
yeah.
SOS program.
Yeah.
Right. I
want to SOS being
specialized office services or temporary.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
I have heard some, I think it's, there's confusion between the two bills. LB 300 does not have any requirement for a bachelor's degree. That's not
no.
300 at all. The only thing relating to the bachelor's degree is LB 445, which is certification for counselors.
Well, thanks. I just knew that there were some people who were
thinking
that.
I had heard that, too.
It's kind of an unspoken... it's unspoken, the requirement, because of the recruits. The recruits are college-educated, and so therefore they're just, you know, I mean, it's an un...
Okay, if we're talking about the...
300.
Well, no, 300 really doesn't have anything in it about... who would be recruited or who would be hired, except to say that the people who would be both recruited and hired would be clients of vocational rehabilitation, the Commission for the Blind, or the temporary assistance to needy families programs. Those are the target programs, and people would need to be clients of those entities. But otherwise, there's nothing in the bill about education level or any of that, or even the types of jobs.
It just, you have to meet the requirements of the job, whatever the requirements.
Yeah, and eligibility for those, to be a client of those entities. So, is there any other public comment?
Martin Bulger here.
Yes.
This goes back earlier, I think, this morning. There was discussion about transportation for the Thursday and the legislation, and then I heard a comment that there was, but it's full. And then there was a comment that we were going to go back and discuss that. Are you following?
The comment that I heard was that we wouldn't here at this meeting go back and discuss that people could go back to their organizations or people they know or whoever, you know, and talk about that as a, because that isn't something that we as a commission board could cause to get into action or provide.
Let me just clarify, we as president of the NFB, we have set up, we've gotten a van, and it is full.
So when you were you speaking for the commission or for NFB?
For NFB.
Okay, that's where I was confused.
So you would
speaking
have
speaking for who?
You would have to contact NFB or ACB. It's, we're not speaking for the commission.
Okay, thank you. That was where I was understood.
Sorry.
I understood.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's where I was confused.
And I'm glad that you brought it up, because it's always good to get those things clarified.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And you say you have a couple openings coming up on the board here?
Yes, at the end, well, there will be three openings on the board.
Let me put in my application.
At the end, well, you'll need to put your application into the governor.
Yeah, we can't do it.
Well, you guys think we have a lot of power. Anyway, the procedure is that you apply through the governor's office. They have people in charge of boards and commissions, and you can call the governor's office. You can get recommendations from people.
I'm going to wish that each one of you board members would provide me with a personal recommendation, and then I'll take it for the time.
So that is on public record now. You can't
doubt it. I do. Yeah.
Well, since I don't know you well, I'll go on the public record saying that I wouldn't be able to do that because I don't know you very well. And so, you know, if we're going to be being on public record, that's where I'm coming from. So, anyway, but the procedure is that you get a hold of the governor's office and, you know, go ahead and apply. And you know, seriously, there are three positions up. Bob Burns, Bill Arrester, and I all do go off of the board at the end of this year. So,
actually, there's only one open. The other two are the ACB and NFB designated openings.
Yeah, that's true.
Can I, Mark?
So that is sure.
Just want to thank you for the transparency. Encourage communication. I'm fairly new to Nebraska, and any form of communication that you can continue to improve and reach the people would be appreciated. And I walk away a lot more confident in things. There's a group in the state that cares about Lyons, and you need to let people know that. Just thank you for your efforts. I know you're on a volunteer basis, and just keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming and for speaking up. We really, really value that.
Well, so. And one of the ways to stay informed
for the most part
is to sign up for the listserv, which most of you in this room are on.
Okay. If there is no further public comment, our next was somebody seeking the floor. Otherwise, final announcements. I want to thank everybody who provided the lunch.
That was good.
That was delicious. Yeah. And also the donuts, rolls, those things. Mm-hmm. It's always nice to come to a meeting and, you know, be able to have something like that too. So thank you very much for that.
Yeah, Nancy, did you pay for those out of your pocket?
Let's move on to the next one.
You should have known better to ask her that.
And we want to thank Nancy for taking notes for us today. Val had to be at a funeral of a close friend, and so, you know, we're sorry that she couldn't be here, but thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Hubert, for taking the doing the recording and keeping us on track with the beeper thing.
Yes,
thank
you.
And just for the record, I'm getting
and thank you, Pearl, for preparing and everything, and thank you, fellow commissioners. And we're actually ahead of schedule. The meeting is adjourned.
Right.